this VOA News. I'm Laurel Bowman. Republican presidential candidate Donald Trump's border message is making inroads with key voters that U.S. President Joe Biden needs to win re-election. AP correspondent Jennifer King reports.
Donald Trump has ramped up his anti-immigrant rhetoric.
Millions of people coming across the border, coming from jails, from prisons.
And his message appears to be resonating with the same voters President Biden has been counting on to win re-election in November.
Now he says immigrants are poisoning the blood of our country. What the hell is he talking about?
When it comes to problems at the U.S.-Mexico border, Biden portrays it as a policy dispute that Congress can fix. But a recent AP poll found 40% of Democrats and 73% of Hispanic adults disapprove of how Biden is handling border security. Rudy Menchaca, an Eagle Pass bar owner, is the type of Hispanic voter Biden is counting on. He says despite the rhetoric, he's been warming towards Trump because problems at the border are hurting business. Vitris Boyce, a Chicago business owner and racial justice activist, argues that Democrats should be focusing on economic investment in black communities, not newcomers. Jennifer King, Washington.
South Korea's president has vowed not to back down in the face of protests by doctors seeking to derail his plan to drastically increase medical school admissions. More from VOA's Tommy McNeil.
In a nationally televised speech Monday, President Yoon Suk-yeol called the walkouts by doctors an illegal collective action that poses a grave threat to the society. About 12,000 medical interns and residents in South Korea have been on strike for 6 weeks, causing hundreds of canceled surgeries and other treatments at university hospitals. Yoon says that increasing the number of doctors is a state project that we can't further delay, citing the country's rapidly aging population. Tommy McNeil, VOA News.
This is VOA News. Israeli forces have withdrawn from Al-Shifa Hospital in Gaza City after a two-week operation, the Israeli military said Monday, leaving behind a wasteland of destroyed buildings and Palestinian bodies scattered in the dirt of the complex. Israel said it had battled Hamas militants at the site. Russia has used five of its new hypersonic Zircon missiles to attack Kyiv since the start of the year. That's what the city's military administration said on Monday. The attacks are among more than 180 Russian missile and drone attacks launched against the Ukrainian capital in the first 3 months of the year, the administration said in a post on Telegram. Turkey on Monday was coming to grips with the opposition's unexpected success in local elections that saw it outperform President Tayyip Erdogan's ruling party. Political analyst Burke Essen from Sabancı University called the center-left Republican People's Party, or CHP party, called that success a phenomenal victory.
The main opposition party delivered the biggest election defeat of President Erdogan's entire political career. And in fact, they performed so well that they had their best night since the 1977 elections.
CHP kept hold of Istanbul and the capital Ankara by wide margins, but also added wins in more conservative provinces. AP correspondent Charles de la Desma now reports that Iraqi basketball has signed an American star.
A pro basketball team in Iraq is owned by a paramilitary group, and some of its forces recently attacked American troops. But this hostility toward Uncle Sam has its limits. The team is banking on a high-scoring American to help lead them to a championship win. Like many former U.S. college basketball players, 27-year-old Uchenna Ira-Egbu of Sacramento has taken his talents abroad, excelling on teams in Nigeria and Qatar. Now he's in Baghdad, just in time for the Iraqi Basketball Super League playoffs. From a basketball perspective, signing Ira-Egbu is a no-brainer. He's led Qatar's league in scoring. Politically, it's a little bit more complicated. I'm Charles de la Desma.
Iran tipped off Russia about the possibility of a major terrorist operation on its soil ahead of the concert hall massacre near Moscow last month, three sources familiar with the matter said. In the deadliest attack inside Russia in 20 years, gunmen opened fire with automatic weapons at concert goers on March 22nd at the Crocus Hall, killing at least 144 people in violence claimed by Islamic State militant group. I'm Laurel Bowman for VOA News.
Africa News Tonight on The Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Yehia Suhib in Washington. Here's what's coming up on Africa News Tonight.
This deployment was very hastily decided, and one rather gets the impression that if there is a plan, the plan is not very clearly communicated, because certainly the members on the ground being deployed are being left in the lurch, so to speak, because of these equipment shortages and so on.
That's Advocate Picky Greff, head of South Africa's National Defense Union, on questions whether South African troops have been given enough support to help tame the violence in the eastern DRC. Details coming up. Also, political parties in Mali want a firm time frame for presidential elections as the ruling junta drags its feet. And Cameroon's opposition parties are encouraging citizens to learn from Senegal's peaceful transfer of power. These stories and more on Africa News Tonight. We start with our top story. The Nigerian naira appreciated significantly against the U.S. dollar throughout March 2024, marking a major turnaround for Nigeria's exchange rate policy. We have in studio Haruna Shehu, executive producer of VOA's Hausa TV, to brief us on the matter. Welcome to Africa News Tonight, Haruna.
Thank you for having me.
So, the Nigerian currency, the naira, continues its recovery against the U.S. dollar and the foreign exchange market, which should be very good news for Nigerians. What caused the turnaround?
Yeah, so a number of things happened, government policies, but three major things to mention here include the clampdown on, you know, currency speculators. So the government has recently been going after people that the government accused of being responsible for this hike, that is the wide disparity between naira and dollar. You might recall one of those people or companies is the Binance cryptocurrency platform that the government has actually banned from operating in Nigeria. And at the same time, the government also get more money to bureau the change operators. This is something the government has stopped in the past, but now the government has resumed giving them money, but then asking them to cap the price of that money to people. And also another thing is the tightening of the monetary policy to restore confidence in naira. You know, that will allow investors from outside the country to bring in dollars, which is in short supply at the moment.
So, like what you're saying is, does the central bank have any role to play in this as far as adjusting rates to manage, you know, the demand for foreign currency against its level of foreign reserves?
Yeah, so the Central Bank of Nigeria is the major driver in these successes that have been recorded recently. Initially, the government, the bank said the naira was allowed to float, which the value of naira would be determined based on supply and demand. But then that has led the naira to go low and then the dollar to go high up. So now the central bank is coming to say, okay, we are going to take so many actions. One of them is the clearance of about $70 billion forex backlog. So the central bank has cleared that. And then the central bank is now also distributing or selling dollars to bureau the change operators. Don't forget about 4,000 of them the licenses of about 4,000 of them have been revoked by the same central bank, all in an effort to restore confidence, in an effort to fight this continuous free fall of naira.
So this will have a very, according to what you're saying, is this will have a very positive impact on the country's economy?
Yeah, definitely. Although there has not been significant impact yet seen as a result of these successes recorded recently. But then if you look at, let's say, payment of school fees, especially people who are outside the country whose children are studying in US, UK, mm-hmm. Yes, there has been like 15% drop in the amount of money that they are paying. So also international and local air flight. But again, when it comes to food, Inflation is still around 30%, which is the highest since 1966 in the country. And some economic analysts are saying it will continue to remain like this until the current stock of food that was purchased using at the exchange rate when Naira was being exchanged at 1,900 per dollar is exhausted. So people have not started seeing the impact of this huge success, especially on the prices of food.
We'll see it in the coming weeks and months. And you're saying the Naira turnaround is sustainable?
Well, this is something that is very difficult to say, because one of the reasons for the high pressure on Naira is short supply of the foreign exchange. Nigeria has been significantly importing more than it exports. And you have to export before you can get more foreign exchange that the country needs, especially for the payment of school fees, medical tourism, and stuff like that. So still Nigeria is heavily dependent on importing almost everything. So this intervention, welcome as it is, might not seem to be sustainable unless Nigeria is able to export more to earn more foreign exchange.
We'll see in the coming days and months. Haruna Shehu, executive producer of VOA's Hausa TV, thank you for your input.
Thank you very much.
After months of debate and political crisis caused by outgoing President Macky Sall's decision to delay Senegal's elections, the country pulled it off. Elections took place in a calm, credible, and transparent setting. A new president was elected and is getting ready to be sworn in. Some say what happened in Senegal may inspire others in sub-Saharan Africa, as VOA's Nairobi bureau chief Mariama Diallo reports from Dakar.
The tensions of the last few months in Senegal seem to be fading away, to be replaced by the hope that Senegal's reputation as a beacon of democracy in the region has been restored. Barrister Agbor Bala, president of the Center for Human Rights and Democracy in Africa, told VOA, Senegal's success may have helped turn the wave of military coups in the region.
If Macky Sall had stayed longer, it might have given rise to a coup d'etat. Look at the other countries around Senegal in West Africa. We've seen how civilian governments have been toppled by military.
A feeling echoed by Ibrahima Diallo, founder of FNDC, the National Front for the Defense of Democracy and Human Rights in Guinea, a country that recently experienced a coup. Diallo told VOA the lessons of democracy in Senegal have resonated. He said, I think the electoral process in Senegal has given more power and solid arguments to pro-democracy activists in Guinea and the rest of West Africa to say there are no other ways to follow but the democratic way for stability and development of our countries. Diallo says he and others were hopeful the junta led by Mamadi Doumbouya, who toppled Guinean President Alpha Conde in 2021, would soon organize elections. But it never happened. He told us, we decided to demonstrate, to remind the junta that when it took over, it had promised to transition the country into civilian rule. I was arrested and spent 9 months in prison without being tried, only because I was asking the junta to respect what they had said by organizing free and fair elections to transition to civilian rule and go back to their military barracks. Prince Michael Nguesse Ekoso is the national president of the United Socialist Democratic Party in Cameroon, a country that has been ruled by the same leader for over four decades.
We have had a lot of setbacks on the watch of this current regime, just like the Senegalese stood up and say that we will follow the aspirations of the people and we will follow the institutions and the laws of the land. I am calling on Cameroonians, especially young Cameroonians like myself, as well as older people, to go and register massively in the electoral list.
At 48 years old, Ekoso hopes to one day replace his country's president, Paul Biya, 91, one of the longest-serving presidents in Africa. He congratulates the people of Senegal and President-elect Bassirou Diomaye Faye, whose victory in the recent election followed a political crisis sparked by outgoing President Macky Sall's failed attempt to postpone the vote. Faye defeated ruling party coalition candidate Amadou Ba in the first round with over 54% of the vote. Mariama Diallo, VOA News, Dakar, Senegal.
Political parties in Mali have requested a time frame for presidential elections after the ruling junta failed to organize polls within a promised 24-month transition back to democracy. Reuters reports that in a joint statement yesterday, some of Mali's main political parties and civil society groups urged authorities to set up an institutional framework for polls as soon as possible. The message, with over 20 signatories, says, "We will use all legal and legitimate avenues for the return of normal constitutional order in our country." The junta did not immediately respond. Mali has been under military rule since August 2020, the first of 8 coup d'etats in West and Central Africa over 4 years, including in its neighbors Burkina Faso and Niger. Mali's current junta seized power in a second 2021 coup and later promised to restore civilian rule in 24 months, ending last week. But it has said it would postpone elections for technical reasons. You're listening to Africa News Tonight on The Voice of America. And for more information on these and other stories from the continent, please see voaafrica.com. There you'll find all your favorite VOA radio and TV programs and a whole lot more. For world news, check out voanews.com. In February, the South African government deployed 3,000 troops on top of the 1,000 it already had there to war-ravaged Eastern Democratic Republic of Congo. At the time, Pretoria said the deployment was part of its commitment to peacekeeping in Africa and to help the DRC to resist rebel attacks. But now, as Darren Taylor reports, South African soldiers say they lack even basic equipment, making them extremely vulnerable.
The soldiers say some of them don't have weapons, and they're expected to fight M23 rebels without the support of attack and transport helicopters. The country's dealing with a variety of economic ills. Defense Minister Thandi Modise told journalists in Pretoria recently only 5 of 39 Oryx transport helicopters were functional, and only 3 of 11 Roy Falk attack helicopters could fly. Her department acknowledges it failed to renew a contract with the company to maintain and repair the aircraft. The troops in DRC say they also don't have access to doctors and nurses and sometimes go to bed hungry after running out of food. Head of South Africa's National Defence Union, Advocate Pukki Grief, says the government sent its soldiers into one of the world's most dangerous war zones without the necessary logistics, funding and training.
South Africa's troops has been deployed there under circumstances where they now have to set up a base from anew, and also with an offensive mindset, not a defensive one. And that is something that I think is quite a learning curve for the Defence Force, because we haven't really practiced that. And you know, what you don't practice regularly, you're not going to execute very well. But apart from that, there are financial constraints beyond the control of these soldiers. There is no aircraft available to take in the necessary equipment and stuff that the soldiers would need on a deployment to support them fully.
Since February, rebels have killed several South African infantrymen and wounded more in a mortar attack. Grief says he speaks with the soldiers in DRC every day and their morale is low. He says some feel as if they're on a suicide mission.
These people are at great risk. This deployment was very hastily decided, and one rather gets the impression that if there is a plan, the plan is not very clearly communicated, because certainly the members on the ground being deployed are being left in the lurch, so to speak, because of these equipment shortages and so on. The situation is very precarious.
Speaking in Parliament recently, President Cyril Ramaphosa denied that his administration had sent troops into DRC on a whim and without the necessary support. He insisted his soldiers are combat ready and well resourced.
We have been part of peacekeeping missions all over the world. Now we support our Defense Force personnel who brave great dangers to make Africa a more peaceful and stable continent. That is what we applaud them for, and we dip our heads for those who are injured and those who may well have fallen.
But Grief says many more South African soldiers will be wounded and killed in DRC unless they don't soon get the resources they desperately need. Military and defense analysts say the South African government's peacekeeping ambitions are not matched with the money needed to ensure their success. For VOA News, I'm Darren Taylor in Johannesburg.
A top Namibian health official tells VOA the Southern African country is set to begin distribution of the HPV vaccine to adolescent girls as a preventative measure in the fight against cervical cancer. Vittorio Angula reports from Windhoek, Namibia.
Namibia has a population of about 1 million women aged 15 years and older who are at risk of developing cervical cancer. Each year, about 375 women in Namibia are diagnosed with the disease, but the fatality rate is over 50%. The human papillomavirus vaccine, known as HPV, has been proven to greatly lessen the chance of getting cervical cancer. Ben Nagombe, executive director at the Namibia's Ministry of Health and Social Services, says health workers will begin vaccinating about 183,000 girls between the ages of 9 and 14 next month. He says the ministry has been allocated $7 million to procure single-dose vaccines for this purpose. Mehafo Amunyela works at the Be Free Youth Program in the capital's Katutura Township. The youth center runs a variety of programs for young people in underserved communities. Speaking in her personal capacity, Amunyela told VOA that vaccine hesitancy can be a hurdle to fully immunizing the target population. She hopes, however, that through awareness campaigns, children and their families can be educated about the advantages of getting the vaccine.
We saw the reaction of the public towards the COVID vaccine when it came out. But I think we need to be honest with ourselves and remember that the reason we don't have illnesses like polio is because of vaccines. That they worked then and they still do now.
The Cancer Association of Namibia says the vast distances between most towns and villages in Namibia could present another logistical challenge in the immunization program. The association says to achieve the target of immunizing 183,000 girls, awareness campaigns should be undertaken in the different indigenous languages spoken in the country. Kuchi Shirange is the association's spokesperson.
We have always been excited from the day we heard that the vaccines will be rolled out to the girl child in Namibia, because this has always been a campaign that we have raised and education that we have raised everywhere on our outreach programs when we are educating people in terms of cervical cancer elimination. We would always include HPV education and also knowledge so that the people understand.
With the rollout of the HPV vaccine, Namibia is on the path of meeting the World Health Organization's goal of vaccinating 90% of girls worldwide by 2030, with the long-term goal of eliminating cervical cancer within the next century. Although cervical cancer is preventable and curable, the disease claimed 350,000 lives in 2022, according to the World Health Organization. Vitalio Angula, Windhoek, Namibia.
In South Africa, skateboarding is enjoying something of a revolution. The once predominantly male pursuit is attracting more and more women. VOA's Zahir Kasim reports from Johannesburg.
Boards, helmets, knee pads, and a whole lot of determination to bounce back when you take a tumble. Welcome to Girl Skate. It might not always look graceful, but it's a blast for these kids. Girl Skate was founded by Sharnae Jacobs about 10 years ago when she realized she was often the only female in her local skate park. Sharnae was determined to spark a change. Today, she holds free training sessions in Soweto and other impoverished communities like this one in Kaya Sands.
This was the perfect opportunity for me to get a skate park in for them and start doing sessions with them, because I do believe that skateboarding can teach life lessons to the kids and it can help them a lot.
Perseverance, confidence, and a splash of self-expression. Jacobs is instilling these values in her students. 17-year-old Maya Mashaba has only been skating for 3 months, but is already feeling the thrill.
Oh, I feel so good. Like, it's very fun. It's scary to see someone else doing it, but once you try, it's very nice.
Mashaba has women's skateboarding trailblazers like skateboarder Bopelo Awua to look up to. She represented South Africa at the Tokyo Olympics in 2021. Awua was only 15 years old, and unfortunately, an injury kept her out of the games, but her presence was part of a trend. Awua initially got into skateboarding because of her brother. She would see him in the yard skating with his friends, and when they weren't looking, she would borrow his board and start practicing. Today, the girls don't have to sneak around, play with the boys.
Now, I feel like they don't really have a choice because there's been such a rapid growth of female skateboarders. It's kind of become normal. And some of the female skateboarders, I mean, we're skating at the same level or very close level as the boys. So there's not really much they can do about it, but just to accept it openly.
Awua is trying to win a spot in this year's Olympic Games in Paris. And if she gets there, she wants her performance to bring even more goals to the sport that has given us so much joy. Siri Kasim, BOA News, Johannesburg, South Africa.
In Nigeria, student journalists are leading efforts to hold public officials accountable. A media nonprofit is training students to investigate public construction projects and other targets of corruption and report to the community. For VOA, Timothy Obiezu has the story.
James Akpashe arrives for a checkup at the community medical center in Dadere, but it's not for his health. The student journalist is there to see how well the government-run center in Nigeria's central Nasarawa state is working. It's part of an initiative called Udeme, an Ibibio word for My Share. It sends student journalists known as U-monitors to investigate public projects and hold authorities accountable. Akpashe has been a U-monitor since last April.
Sometimes you travel to those communities where those projects have been awarded. You discover that those residents don't want to talk to you because they have no idea of those projects. So you face challenges, maybe sometimes threats to your life. And when a lawmaker find out or individual find out you are doing a story that will implicate him.
The Media Nonprofit Center for Journalism, Innovation and Development, or CJID, launched Udeme in 2018. It recruits about 100 students like Akpashe each year. They track public infrastructure projects like the construction of schools and hospitals. And they talk to residents about what they find. Ijoma Okereke Adagba is a program manager with Udeme.
So our youth monitors are fluent in the local dialect in those places. So when they go on radio shows, they speak in those local dialects so that people can understand the relevance of the topic that we're talking about. And we see them calling in after the program.
Nigeria ranks 145th out of 180 countries on the Transparency International Corruption Perceptions Index. The CJID says ignorance is often why public officials are not held accountable. At a visit to Nigeria's Independent Corrupt Practices Commission in February, authorities pledged their support. Clifford Okparodu is the secretary of Nigeria's Independent Corrupt Practices Commission.
The issue of corruption and corrupt practices is a problem. We always continue to work with you.
CJID says its approach brings change and could be a model other media should follow. The initiative brings results. When Akpashe first visited this health center, it was not operational. A few months after he reported on it, the government opened the hospital to the community, a small step to holding public officials accountable. Timothy Obiezu, VOA News, Abuja, Nigeria.
And with that, we wrap up this edition of Africa News Tonight. On behalf of our producer, David Von D, and our engineer, Rob McLean, thanks for choosing The Voice of America.